Welcome to TalentWise, the definitive podcast for CXOs, human resource and learning and development leaders. This show comes to you from thought leaders who talk about human capital development in today's organization. How to engage and empower today's employee to be effective, competitive and relevant. Stay with us for an exciting conversation with our guest and learn how to future-proof your team. I'm your host Shubhanjan, founder of KnowledgeBridge. Our guest today is Ramesh Srinivas, co-founder and CEO of WorkSogo.
If you look at field sales for financial services, for instance, some of the banks in India employ field sales people of between 60 to about 80 or 90,000 field sales. That's the field force that they have out in the market. Now, that's a very large, massive number. One of the changes that appears to be very significant and driven by technology is the fact that a lot of, at least up until a few years ago, field sales people had to go out and get in touch with a large number of customers, right? So it was about them reaching out to people, getting leads and coming back in, etc. But today's digital allows the bank itself to get in touch through digital means with a host of customers. It has two significant impacts. Number one is the fact that the, if you want to call it, productivity of that salesperson goes up because they help in the closure part. Number two, most significant, is the number of job roles of that is going to come down. If you look at the field sales structure today of any of these large field forces, if you have 60,000, let's say, feet on street, for typically every five of them, you will have one first level supervisor. So 60,000 feet on street, you have 12,000 supervisors. And each of those 12,000, let's say, each of those five or six of them, you'll have another second level supervisor, right? Which goes into 2,000 or 3,000, let's say. So there are these layers of management that get built up. And the only role of that management really is monitoring the feet on street. Strictly speaking, their only value add is in managing, if you want to call it that, all of these people. Today, technology like AI allows people at the top to manage the field force without some of these intermediate layers.
With over 25 years of industry and consulting experience, Ramesh led large IT transformation programs. As a partner at PwC, IBM and KPMG, he led SAP implementations across manufacturing and consumer sectors. Ramesh's expertise includes business transformation, profitability improvement, SAP implementation and supply chain re-engineering. Now on to this insightful episode of TalentWise with Ramesh Srinivas.
Good morning, Ramesh. Thank you for joining me today in TalentWise. I'm very excited to talk to you, especially because you are one of the few people I know who is actually working with technology, artificial intelligence, and you are actually seeing how it is impacting people and how it can impact people. So thank you very much for making time and welcome to TalentWise.
Thanks, Subhanjan. Thanks a lot.
So there is a huge amount of change that is happening, and we are actually, as a society, making a shift from the industrial to the knowledge era. Like steam engines and electricity was the driver and which changed practically everything in terms of way of life and work vis-a-vis the agrarian society, computational power or computers are powering the change in the shift from the industrial to the knowledge society. From your experience and your vantage point, how do you see it impacting work?
Actually, you've painted a very broad brush of the changes, and I completely agree that across the board, there are going to be huge changes in the way work is done, huge changes in the skills required also to perform that kind of work. I'll start with a couple of concrete examples of how it changes, because it's hard today to predict how it will change at a macro level. But at a micro level, at least I'm beginning to see significant signs of those change already with a number of customers, for example, that I work with today. So let me take one example, and let me take the example of people we often get in touch with, which is field sales. So if you look at field sales for financial services, for instance, Some of the banks in India employ field salespeople of between 60 to about 80 or 90,000 field sales. That's the field force that they have out in the market. Now that's a very large, massive number. I'm already beginning to see changes in their working day on a day-to-day basis that's happening in there. One of the changes that appears to be very significant and driven by technology is the fact that a lot of up until a few years ago, field salespeople had to go out and get in touch with a large number of customers, right? So it was about them reaching out to people, getting leads and coming back in, etc. But today's digital allows the bank itself to get in touch through digital means with a host of customers, which means you don't necessarily need the salesperson going out and reaching out and kind of getting active leads or prospects into the system. That percentage of leads that are coming in through digital means is increasing.
Right.
It has two significant impacts. Number one is the fact that if you want to call it, productivity of that salesperson goes up because they help in the closure part. Number two, most significant, is the number of job roles of that is going to come down. Right. You no longer over a period need 80,000. As the digital business picks up, that 80 will slowly start shrinking, right? Which automatically means that there is an impact on the kind of or the number of these opportunities that are going to come up, which today are a fairly significant number. That's the first.
Right.
Second, which is even more interesting, is the fact that if you look at the field sales structure today of any of these large field forces, if you have 60,000, let's say, feet on street, for typically every five of them, you will have one first level supervisor. So 60,000 feet on street, you have 12,000 supervisors.
Right.
And each of those 12,000, let's say each of those five or six of them, you will have another second level supervisor, right? Which goes into 2,000 or 3,000, let's say. So there are these layers of management that get built up. And the only role of that management really is monitoring the feet on street, because between the top level where they figure out saying what are the products we are going to sell and the policies and the structure and the promotions and the pricing, etc., all layers in between only translate that or transmit that information to the feet.
Right.
So the feet on street are the actual workers. People at the top are the ones who take the call on what to do. All layers in between, strictly speaking, their only value add is in managing, if you want to call it that, all of these people. Today, technology like AI allows people at the top to manage the field force without some of these intermediate layers. I wouldn't say it will go away completely, but I know of customers today who've changed that the span of control from 5 or 6 to 10 or 12.
Right.
Which means automatically the number of first level supervisors has halved. A number of second level supervisors also halved, right? And that's a significant shift. It's significant not only in job opportunities, but in saying historically people who are at that feet on street level, after a few years of experience, graduate up to becoming a manager, as we call them, right? Or a supervisor and so on. But all of a sudden those opportunities are also limited. So now the significant, and a lot of customers tell me this, saying, for us, we are looking at saying as many of our people should add direct value to our business as possible. Managing people internally is not adding value. Right? Either you go out and get customers, you go out and service customers, but everyone needs to have a specific value. And these layers are not seen as being as high value add as the people who actually do the work at the ground.
Right.
It's not very different from shop floors if you look at it. Today, thanks to robotics, etc., the number of these so-called supervisors in shop floors has dramatically shrunk.
Yes.
Right, in a typical factory.
Yes.
The same thing is happening here as well. And that has a lot of implications for people in terms of saying, how do you stay relevant? Because you have two choices. Either you do the same job for a longer number of years, or you reskill yourself because this going up and just managing is coming down as a set of opportunities. I don't have an answer.
Right.
But these are questions that I've heard a lot of customers talking about, saying, look, this is going to be a big shift. Of course, from a corporate standpoint, it's good because it cuts costs, so to say, right? If you look at it from a human and an individual standpoint, the implication is what do they do? And today, it's not easy for us to predict or say, okay, if you lose, or let's say, for example, one of these banks decides that 6,000 managers are no longer needed 2 years down the line, right? Out of the 12,000 they have.
Right.
What are they, where are they going to get? They won't get redeployed within that same company. What are they going to do? What do they reskill themselves on? Because they are no longer specialists in what they do. I mean, they don't have a special skill. They are generalists. They manage large numbers of people. But increasingly, wherever you go, that need to do that has is beginning to come down thanks to technology. So I think it has a lot of implication in terms of saying, what do we reskill these people for? And what do they do? So I, on the one hand, I think it is something that that's a little concerning as well, because if you look at it fairly as a country, if you look at it and take off a corporate and say, you know, you want to cut costs and make money, as a country, you need more jobs. And where are these jobs going to come from? The more automation you have, the more tech you use in many areas, I would say, not all, these would shrink. And while at a macro level, it's okay to say we can reskill them in technology and take them. If you actually look at some of these people, is it possible to reskill them into learning AI and, you know, becoming tech people? Unlikely, right? So what are they going to do? It's a question that does come up and I needs to be tackled from the entire education system level. Because it's not something that you can, of course, like you said earlier, right? It's not going to happen in 2 or 3 years. It'll take maybe 20, 25, 30 years, but it's going to happen in that period nevertheless.
We'll take a short break. When we come back, we will discuss the impact of the flattening of organizational structures and what that means for the managerial pool that is likely to be most impacted. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Show How To audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences.
Welcome back. Before the break, Ramesh spoke about the vanishing middle layer as a consequence of the flattening of organization. Let's continue with this fascinating discussion.
So two things I hear you. One is that, I mean, you mentioned this and I think you just elaborated on that, that technology is actually flattening out organizations, the hierarchy layers, which are not really contributing towards the bottom line or towards development of products, but merely managing manpower will go. So one quick question around this is, so India has this proverbial demographic dividend, which sees 1 million people getting added to the workforce, 1 million every month for the next 20 years, right? So 250 million youngsters will be joining. So essentially what will happen in the short run, Ramesh, and correct me if I'm wrong, that these people, these managerial type of people or the supervisors who would now lose their job in the next 5, 6, 7 years, they will then start competing with the youngsters for jobs at the initial level, perhaps, I don't know. And that will even create, I mean, as it is, our youngsters are not very employable because of the education system legacy that we have. And that can actually create a bit of unrest, do you think?
Short term, I don't know. See, on the one hand, I think we need to factor in the fact that economically we are growing anyway. So that organically itself leads to a larger number of availability of jobs, right? So that is there. But what you're saying is also true, that yes, there will be some kind of a competition, if you want to say, between people who have this level of experience and youngsters who are entering the workforce itself. So the challenge probably lies in saying, what are the different kinds of jobs, therefore, that can get created? And, you know, we've had jobs that got created in recent times that didn't even exist 4 years ago, right? Take the food delivery business. There are 500,000 people employed in food delivery in India in three companies alone.
Right.
It didn't exist a few years ago, right? Just food delivery. Leave aside all the other kind of, delivery boys and everything else that's there. It didn't even exist. So it's a completely new job that is there. And I guess with tech, some of that will come. But from a longer standpoint, I would say, like I said before, companies are saying people who actually add value will always have a job.
Correct.
The question is, how do you reskill yourself constantly to make sure you remain at that adding value level?
So that's where actually the theme of future-proofing the team comes in. So how much of that future-proofing of the team will be happening by the companies which are employing people today, or how much is going to happen as an individual initiative that I need to stay relevant is, I think, the question.
Actually, that's a good point. A lot of the progressive companies that I work with or that I've seen at any rate are the type who take on the onus in some sense on themselves to say, look, we need to constantly make sure that our people stay upskilled and relevant as they go along. Part of it is the fact that they are also adapting themselves to whatever the new technology that's coming up and looking at saying, how do we redeploy, move people around. So part of it is that. But I don't think all companies will really be looking at it. So there is a significant onus on the individual to make sure that they also remain relevant in terms of upskilling in whichever area it is. And like I said before, I don't think there are easy answers to this. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it is something that they'll have to look at from their own point of view, right? So take the delivery boys example I gave you, right?
Yes. Yes.
Apparently, the longest most of them stay in that job is 2 to 3 years, and a lot of it has to do with the physical stress behind that job.
Right.
So while can say there are these large number, 500,000 whatever, it's there for 2 or 3 years, then they move out, and when they move out, what do they do? What are the skills that they've then got that enable them to find something that's equally remunerable in some sense? I think is the challenge that's there.
Right. So that brings me to the next point, which I think sort of dovetails into this thought, Ramesh. You mentioned about, I mean, at WorkSoGo and with your AI engine, you talk about augmenting the human capability and not replacing a human, right?
Correct.
That's sort of the thrust that I see. So do you see part of the solution will be in actually, it's not necessary that you have to go and relearn completely, but you can use technology as a lever to enhance your own productivity thereby. So, I mean, at least it will impact some people and thereby stay relevant. How do you see that playing out?
That's precisely what we as a company saw as an opportunity and are trying to do. Saying in many areas, technology can replace people, right? The way we looked at it was saying, can we do something with technology that complements or augments the capability of people so that their productivity goes up, and as a result, you know, their own job satisfaction, career prospects, everything goes up as a result, right? So that's what we've tried to do in here, saying let's take a different tack. And let's take an example, or let's take an example at a very, very ground level, right? Let's take an example of someone sitting in a retail store salesperson. Typically, you wouldn't associate them with high technology. But today, if you go to a retail store, and that retail salesperson has the use of technology to be able to compare products for you, to be able to tell you what is different about different products, to be able to kind of sell it more effectively for you, your own shopping experience significantly goes up as a result.
Right.
And that's only, it's hard to do that through ongoing training of someone because that's a one-off exercise. But tech allows that salesperson there to do whatever they are supposed to do substantially more productively and effectively.
Right.
So what does that mean? You as a customer end up feeling much more satisfied, if you want to say that, with your shopping experience. Likelihood is they end up, you know, doing their job and selling something to you. So it works both ways.
Yes.
And this is at retail store person level. Today there are, in some industries at any rate, people who begun using that or trying it out. And some of those experiments are very encouraging. The interesting thing I find, Subhanjan, is the willingness of people there to adopt this is extremely high. A part of it may be the fact that that generation has grown up with technology.
Right.
They have learned it like the earlier, older generation. So for them, it's a natural thing. They use this tech for personal purposes, right? Doing a variety of things. I mean, ordering food, booking a cab, whatever else. Mixing with friends, all of that they use this for. So for them, it's a natural thing to use it for their work as well. So adoption of this is very, very high. Unlike, let's say, 15, 20 years ago when enterprise technology systems came, the big problem was how do you get people to adopt it?
Correct.
Move away, take it up. This is not a problem here at all today. Today, there is a pull from them saying, you give me more tech, I'll use it well. That, I think, is a great encouraging part of this.
So it is actually moving the other way around. Earlier, technologies were adopted by corporations, then it sort of trickled down to the people. Now it is the other way around. People are already using the technology because of the smartphone revolution. And now it's trickling back into the enterprise and space of work.
Exactly.
Right. So what kind of actual initiatives in the ground are you seeing in terms of companies proactively trying to sort of, how are they trying to keep their workforce relevant and thereby also keeping themselves relevant, I guess?
So it's like that retail example that I gave you. A lot of it seems to today, a number of enterprises that I see at least, are looking at saying, how do we enable our people to do their jobs better through technology? And there are a lot of stuff, right? There's analytics, and there's AI, and there's a host of, IoT, a host of different things you can do. A lot of it really is saying, how can we use technology? Of course, it's a process, etc. But fundamentally saying, how do we also help our people perform better using technology? So there is a big push. Of course, I would say that a lot of it is at experimental stages. It's not these huge projects that go, but a lot of companies do a large number of small initiatives to see what's working, what's not working. So the willingness to experiment, try, fail, try something else is considerably higher at a company level than it was even 5-6 years ago.
I have a question, Ramesh. I mean, and tell me what you see. I mean, if you have noticed anything at all. So one part obviously is the profit motivation, right? So the environment is changing. I as an organization need to respond. So technology is coming, which will either has to be adopted, might result in some loss of jobs, or I can use it to augment my workforce and thereby have a stronger sort of delivery mechanism. So is the motivation, do you see the motivation as profit? Or do you see some empathy for the employees as well?
Frankly, Subhanjan, I don't think the employee empathy is kicked in so much yet. Today, I would say it's probably not even profit. It's about fear of being left behind.
Right.
Saying technology is changing things so fast. If I don't, some competition adopts it, goes well ahead of me, I mean, what do I do? So currently, it's at the stage, and I guess it's because of the lack. None of these technologies have matured completely in that sense. They're all there, and it's not as if they are clearly defined use cases. Each company can build its own set of use cases. Right? I was mentioning about Titan earlier. Right? Titan has some 85, 90 projects that are running concurrently. And the interesting thing he told me was, we think about 30, 35 will succeed, which is very interesting thinking that says, I'm open to the remaining 50, 60 failing.
Right.
But again, he says there are a lot of use cases, small use cases. We are seeing which one works, which one doesn't. But it's more about saying, if we don't, somebody else does, we'll be left behind. So I think the employee thing is still some distance away.
Okay.
And come in once it matures in some sense.
It's still, right now it's about survival and figuring. It's sort of about figuring out the new landscape.
Yeah, exactly.
TalentWise is brought to you by KnowledgeBridge. We produce customized and multilingual visual training content. We have worked on complex processes, products, and skills development for large blue chip brands such as Tata Motors, Mahindra First Choice, HomeLane, Epson, Toyota, Citibank, and Consul NeoWatt, serving diverse industries. Talk to us for your next custom content requirement and be pleasantly surprised. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Great. Thanks, Ramesh. I really appreciate your time. And this was a nice discussion. I think we should continue to talk. And as you see things, and when you see things which are significant, it'll be great if you come back and we get to chat about that again.
Sure. We'll do so. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thank you for being with us today on TalentWise. We hope we helped you focus on some actionable ideas today. It was certainly enlightening for us. We hope to see you again on our next episode. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you're at it. Thank you in advance. This Show How To Original podcast is produced for KnowledgeBridge, the multilingual visual training platform and custom training content creators by Show How To Audio. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time.